Hello, I said good morning. Yeah, turn off your cell phones. Please turn off your cell phones. I want you to know there are some of you who are guilty of not turning off the cell phones, and it's just very disturbing. Very disturbing. So, did you start the? Is the video going?
Yeah.
Okay. Truth is, I feel a little uncomfortable about videoing this year. You understand? We don't have a video of Rabbi Akiva saying this year. We don't have a video of the Vilna Gaon saying this year. But this fellow from Arno, so that's the difference. In our generation, if we do have this technology and somebody can benefit and study a little Torah from it, so it's worthwhile using it. And I need a few more videos, and there are some shiurim that I want to make sure that I have on video, and this one I don't think I have. And it's a shiur that I always find something new, and it's been a long time. So here we go. I once told you if you want to be able to impress somebody, it depends what the circumstances are, you can impress somebody by asking them, what does the last Rashi in Torah say? Oh, last Rashi in Torah. Who knows the last Rashi in Torah? Whoever gets there, you're going to get there right now. Number one, Ulchol Hayyada Chazaka, that's the last pasuk in Torah. It's talking about Moshe. And for all the strong hand, Ulchol Hamora Chazaka, for all the great awesomeness, Asher Osa Moshe, we're talking about Moshe, not about God. Asher Osa Moshe, that Moshe did, Le'enim Koyim soil the eyes of all of Israel. Rashi says, Ulchol Hayyada Chazaka, Shekibalas HaTorah, Baluchot, Amaluchot, V'yadav with his hands. I would usually introduce this last Rashi by asking, what was the greatest thing that Moshe Rabbeinu ever did in his life? So then you would say, he took the Jewish people out of Egypt, he led them for 40 years through the desert, He brought down Torah to the Jewish people. I mean, there are a lot of things that you could say. But the unexpected one is the one that Rashi is going to say. Odd tshuva that Malka wants to say when he told God in this week's Seder, in Parshas Ki Tisah, when they sinned with the angels, so he said to God, forgive them. Be in Ayin, and if not, Mechenino Misifcha Asher Kotafto, erase my name. Forget about me. If you don't forgive them, then that's of course an act of great humility, great power. But Malkin, that's not what Rashi says. What can I do? Let's look at the last Rashi, the one that's underlined. Le'enei Kodin Svarav. What was the greatest thing that he did, Le'enei Kol Yisrael, with the eyes of all of Israel? Shenesa'ol libo, that his heart inspired him? Lishbor haluchot le'eneihem. You would never have thought of that. That his heart inspired him that he should break the tablets before their very eyes. Shenana, as it says, and this is a pasuk we're going to get to later, this is a pasuk in Parashat Eked in Sefer Devarim. I broke them le'enechem before your eyes. I smashed them before your eyes. V'yiskima da'at HaKadosh Baruch Hu le'dato. And God agreed with him. The mind of the Holy One, blessed be He, was in accord with the mind of Moses. Shenem, as it says, Asher Shibarto. God tells him that I will give you another set of tablets in place of those Asher Shibarta, which you shattered, which implies Yasher Kayach, Asher yasher kol chacham. May your strength be well directed, Shishi Prato, for having shattered the tablets. Yasher koyavsha. That you broke the tablets. So the very last thing, last Rashi, is Zip, the greatest thing Moshe did, le'enehem, before the eyes of Israel, I shattered them, le'enehem, before your eyes. Okay? And that's usually how we look at it, but of course, we're going to take, try and elaborate on another approach, and the basic question is going to be boiled down to something with a lot of new ideas coming up over here. Did Moshe break the Luchos, or did the Luchos fall? Did he drop the Luchos? That of course should shake you up. What do you mean he dropped the Luchos? Since I'm 5 years old, I've been learning that Moshe Rabbeinu shattered the Luchos. And even if you take a look at number two in the English translation, art scroll over there in their side comments, Moses smashes the tablets. Now that's enough already to make it clear that he smashed the tablets. Well, it's not that simple. It's not that simple. And in fact, well, maybe turn over the page for a moment. What inspired me to study all of this was some years ago, man, it wasn't 20 years ago. 20 years ago, when I learned number 5. Number 5 appears in the writings of Nechama Leibowitz, Aleha HaShalom. I remember I felt very bad soon after I learned this piece and I disagreed with her. I wanted to speak to her about it, and she passed away.
Mm-hmm. So I was by the Levaya. You told us this before.
Huh?
You told us this story before.
Yes, that's right. Guilty as charged.
I didn't hear.
So I never.
I didn't hear.
Most of you didn't. So but I never got the chance to discuss it with her. But she says the following. And there are a few other questions that we have to ask before we take a look at this. By what right did Moshe Rabbeinu shatter the Luchos? It's yours? It belongs to you, Moshe? God gives Moshe the Luchos in order to bring them down to the Jewish people. His responsibility is to bring it down to them. What are you lifting your hands up against the Luchos? It's not yours. Like I always said, long, long time ago, the great story that we learn as little children, the Medrash about Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu's parents had an idol store, and they went out one day and they left Avraham idol sitting to take care of all the big and the little idols, and he chopped them all up except the biggest one, and he put the axe into the hand of the big one. The parents come home and they say, "Achur in God in Himmel, who destroyed my idols?" And Avraham is supposed to say, "Could the Medrash?" Avraham says, "Take a look. This one has the idol in the axe in his hand. He did." So they say to him, "What are you talking about? He's so hashtikholt. He couldn't do anything." So the Medrash says that Avraham told his parents, "Shmana, let your ears hear what your mouth has just said." So I said, it's very clear to me that the story is a made-up story. It's not real. Because he would never chop up something that doesn't belong to him. It's not your getchkala. Keep your hands off. Even George Washington was honest enough to be able to say, "I cannot tell a lie. I chopped down the cherry tree." He knew that it was wrong to chop down a cherry tree. Avraham Avinu knew that it it's wrong to go ahead and chop up all the idols. Moshe Rabbeinu takes that which God intends to be, should be given to the Jewish people, and he shatters it, he smashes it. It may be, according to Rashi, therefore, God tells him, I'm going to give you another set of luchos in the place of those asher shibarta, yasher kochachasher shibarta. Good that you did it, so that God is post facto telling him, yeah, you did a good thing, but I want to know, what right did Moshe Rabbeinu have to do it in the first place? Right? That's a question. What did he do? We'll get back to that. We're going to see right away why he did it. And here the question is expressed by Nechama Leibowitz. Mahai tar kavanato b'maaseh. What was his intention? Number five. Leading number five. Uminayim lakach la'atzmo reshut la'asot maaseh kazeh. Where did he have the permission? Where did he take the responsibility to do something of this sort? It's not his. Does it belong to him? Now, this is the sentence that shook me in, don't get me wrong, just as I ended up, had one question on the Nechama Leibowitz out of all the massive amount of Torah that she taught. You know, it's like, I only got one question on it, that's all. Yeah. She says, V'lo nuchal kabel klal, ma'ashe pidesh harashban, divramasl, he said, she says, we cannot under any circumstances accept the pshat of the Rashbam. Rashbam was an enkel of Rashi, that's a perish of Chumash. And his pshat here is, quote, and this is on this week's Seder, Parshas Kitisa. And we can read from Kitisa. Kishero et ha'egel. Rashbam says that when Moshe Rabbeinu saw the egel, toshash kocho, when he saw the golden calf, Jews are dancing around an egel, he became weak. V'lo hayavo koach la'ashlicham rachom imenu tzak. He didn't even have the strength in him to push it far away from him. You'll see what's happening over here is they're falling. They're falling, and he can't hold on to it. And it's going to fall on his feet. He has to use the last of his strength to just push it so that it should fall just a bit away from him. He didn't have the strength to throw them far from him. They shouldn't hurt his feet. When they fall, kederach kol mashlichei masol, like anybody who casts down a very heavy burden, you want to make sure that it's not going to fall on you. Kishen ben koach loseit, when they can't, they don't have the koach to carry it anymore, so you try with your last koach, just give it up. Push it a little ahead of you. V'chein ro'isi v'pirkei shereb eliezer, I saw this. One of the medrashim of the Tanoim is the Pirkei Rabbeleza, V'igur pshuto kaf. Those words are fascinating. The Rashbam says this is the real pshat in the pasuk, and said, here it is, we have all of you that for the last, I don't know how many years, and should have many more years, you've been walking around thinking that Moshe Rabbeinu shattered the luchos, or as Oswald said over there, Moses smashes the tablets, all right? And here along comes the Chasdam, and he tells you, Vos, basic Vos, what are you talking about? Smash the tablets? He couldn't carry them. So all that he did was he was able to get it that it shouldn't fall on his feet. But the most important thing is, the Chasdam disagreed with his Zayda Rashi. And he describes this disagreement at the beginning of Parshat Vayeshev. He told Zayda Rashi that you used too many midrashim. You should have stuck to shuto shel mikra, to this the real meaning of the text. And he says that the Zayda told him that if he would have time, he would either write another perush or work over his perush on Rashi. Yet he agreed with the Einikol. Now, of course, what's happening over here is you read the psukim, and it seems clear that Moshe smashed them, and Rashbam, the one who stands behind the idea of pshuto shel mikra, the simple meaning, says, Igor pshuto, the real simple textual meaning is this, that they fell, not that he smashed it. That's what the Rashbam says. Yes.
Isn't the exact words of the Torah, the
Ashi Shem,
the
Ashi
Shabren, that more of an active verb?
Wait a minute, you're trying to steal Nechama Leibowitz's thunder, thank God. You're doing okay. You'll see in a moment.
The Pasuk says, Vayashlach mi yadav.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Let's make the questions even stronger. And then we're going to see how the Rashbam indeed learns it. Watch what Nechama Leibowitz says. V'chein, the Rashbam repeats this a second time because the whole story of the Egel and the Luchos appears in Parshas Va'ekev. There Moshe Rabbeinu is telling the story of the desert, what happened in the desert, and he tells them the whole story of the... I went up to the mountain and I made the Luchos and I came down and I saw you dancing around the Egel. And what does it say? So over there, the Rashbam says it even more simply. The chen ubekitzer perishol the chumash devarim v'ashabrein, and I smash them. You hear? On the word v'ashabrein, ki lo atzarti kach, because I didn't have kayach. K'moshe pidashti v'parashat kitisa, as I explained in parashat kitisa. So you're still troubled, but Vashabrein is an active verb. I broke it. So wait, so Nechama asks from a more active verbal puzzle. V'nidu lanu, so she says, it seems that the Rashbam ha-nechshav la'echa b'gdolei ha-pashtanim, the Rashbam was considered one of the great pshat people of Torah. Hitrachei kam miyod b'pshuta shemekra. It seems that here he's move far, far away from Pshuta Shemitra. Pshuta Shemitra is the Moshe Rabbeinu premeditated. He smashed them. Ha'im rotza ha'kosav la'harotenu kam et kushato ha'fizit shel Moshe. The Pasuk here wants to tell us the physical weakness of Moshe. Ha'im zehu ha'nevah b'fasik. Is that what the Pasuk says? She'nishmitu ha'luchot mi'adav, that the luchot slipped from his hand? By the way, that's exactly what the Rashbam is saying. Yes, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't hold them anymore, and they slipped from his hands. Nira shedakta ha'tiyush l'shvidat ha'luchot b'seif v'devonim soter l'chalutin etvarav. It would seem that Moshe Rabbeinu's own description of what happened, when he says it in Seif v'devonim, gives the lie to what the Rashbam was saying. This contradicts the words of the Rashbam. And here he gives that great pasuk. V'et pos b'shnei haluchot, I held on to the two luchot, for ashlichem, and I cast them down, me'al shtei adai, for my two hands, for ashavrein, le'inechem, and I broke them before your very eyes. All right? By the way, to be a shabrein le'inechem, before your eyes, that's why Rashi said in that last pasuk in Torah, what Moshe had done, le'inei, call yourself the eyes of all of Israel, this is it. So of course, in Chavu Leibu, it says, take a look at this, v'et pos, v'ashrichem, v'ashabrein, I grabbed onto them, I cast them down, and I broke them. Go explain that as I got weak and they slipped out of my hands, right? But you know what we're going to accomplish here? Yeah. We are going to come to the defense of the Rashbam, and we're going to read ultimately this this pasuk exactly the way the Rashbam reads it, and I'm going to show you, lefi yodati, it would seem to me, what it is that led the Rashbam to write that this is pshuta shemitra. They slipped. This was not a premeditated act of just picking up, deciding he's going to smash them, and he smashes them. By the way, after I will have proved my point, don't for a moment forget, there's another opinion. And two opinions can live side by side. There's a... And you know what? There's truth that emerges from both opinions. The one that he smashed them, and the one that he slipped and they broke. Yes?
Rabbi Gold, do you think Hashem would have given Moshe another set of lukos if he was a klutz?
By the time I'm finished with this shiur, I am ready to assure you that you will not ask such a kasha, because by the time I've said everything I have to say, that kasha is going to be a klutz kasha. So, right now it isn't. He asked a very good question. You know, don't get me wrong, but I'm not stopping up with your wrist. You know, you'll just say it no more. So I say that, number one, the first thing, let's go back to number two. Number two, we have the text. As it happens, this is the story of the luchos as it happens. Here in Parshas Ki-Tisa, by even by getting motion in a heart, and Moshe turned and he went down from the mountain. And the two tablets of the testimony in his hand. They were tablets of the testimony written on both sides. They were made by God. It was God's handiwork. It was his writing. The words were engraved on the Lucho. Vayishma Yoshua kol ha'om b'deo. Yoshua, who was not in the camp at the time, because Yoshua was waiting in the tent of Moshe, and Moshe had pitched his tent outside the camp. Yoshua heard the sounds of the camp, and he said to Moshe, kol b'lucham ha'machane, I hear the sound of battle in the camp, Vayoma. And Moshe said, ein kol anod gevura, this is not a sound of shouting strength, the ein kol anod chavusha, nor a sound shouting weakness, kol anod anod hishomea, I hear the sounds of distress. Pasuk 19. This pasuk is a pasuk upon which I base my pshat in the Rashbam, and I'm ready to say that most probably the Rashbam saw this pasuk, and it was this pasuk that inspired him to say what he said. Vayehi kasher karav al hamatan, and it came to pass when he, Moshe, came to the camp, vayara ta'egel u'mcholot, and he saw the egel and the dancing around it, vayicharach Moshe. Moshe got angry, vayashleich miyodov et haluchot. And for the present, I will translate Vayashleich, that he threw down, he cast down from his hand the Luchot, and he broke it down at the bottom of the mountain. Okay? I just want you to notice one thing. I'm going to take you on a journey through a number of psukim, both here and in Sefer Devarim. And we're going to see how Moshe Rabbeinu is holding the Luchot. In the first pasuk, take a quick look up at the first pasuk over here. The two tablets are what? Be your bow in his in one hand. When he is casting it down, it's very strange. It's written your dough. The letters spell your dough, but that's not the way it's read. It's read your dough. His hands, plural. That means what he has bring when he brought down from the mountain in one hand, he is now holding in two. Okay? Let's go to number three. Number three is when Hashem tells him to make two a new set of luchos. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, not really make luchos, just prepare the stones. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, God said to Moshe, psolochos shnei luchot avanim korishonim, carve for yourself two stone tablets, v'chatafte ala luchot, and I will write on the luchot at avanim, those things asher hoyu, what was on the ones that you broke? Asher Shibarta also seems to me. By the way, this Asher Shibarta, those are the words that Rashi brings in that great last Rashi in Chumash that you will never forget. That last Rashi in Chumash, Asher Shibarta, Yasher Kochacha, Asher Shibarta, Shkoyach. You did the right thing. Which of course leaves the impression, and that's what Rashi said, that he did it intentionally, premeditated. Maybe I have a new pshat in the Rashbam now. Carolyn Click, writing this past week about how the Americans handled the crisis in Egypt, so she describes it as premeditated incompetence. Premeditated incompetence. I love that. I love that. She had another few good lines over there. Lo yu'uman. In a sense, Moshe Rabbeinu, if they slip from his hands, this is a premeditated incapability to carry the luchos. You see what I mean? I just had to get that in. Just had to assure you that I didn't misread Carolyn this Friday. Okay, that's not the point. Watch. V'hayyeno chol ha'boken, be ready in the morning. V'ol yisav ha'bok al har Sinai, you should come up in the morning to Mount Sinai. V'nitzach kol yishom ha'rosh ha'horn, stand with me at the top of the mountain. V'nishlo yali yimach v'gam yishayero b'chol har, gamatzal v'ha'gokar, al yivol mula har ahu. No one shall come up with you, no man shall be seen by the mountain, neither the sheep nor the cattle shall graze near the mountain. Right. And Moshe did that. This is the second set of luchos. By Yifso, he carved out shnei luchot avanim, two luchot of stone kodishonim. By Yashke Moshe Rabokeh, and Moshe got up in the morning, by Yahu Har Sinai, and he went up to Har Sinai, Kasher Tzivah Hashem HaTorah, as God commanded him. Vayikach. Next word. We are done. One hand. Shnei luchot avanim. One hand. As he begins to come down from the mountain, when after receiving the first luchot, he begins by carrying it in one, and they drop, slip, thrown, two. That means something happened. From the time that he received the first set of luchos until he comes down to the camp, something significant has happened. Maybe what can make this a little better understood, you know, I don't know where to put things. Oh, good. Rav Soloveitchik asks, what's more difficult? Carrying a heavy burden uphill or carrying a heavy burden downhill? Downhill you have gravity with you. Uphill you're fighting gravity. So the Chol asks, and we're going to see right away that the same thing is true in Parashat Ekev, where he repeats the story. In the morning, when he goes up the mountain with the second set of luchos, He's bringing the Luchos. Remember the first ones he didn't bring from the bottom of the mountain? The first set were given to him by God up at the mountain. It's only the second set that God tells him, Solocha, you carve them, you bring them up, and I'm going to write on it what was on the first set of Luchos. So now he's bringing them up the mountain. And you know what? One hand. So the Lord asks, what's going on over here? Coming down the mountain, he can't hold on to it. And going up the mountain, he can carry it in one hand. The Rav takes the position. We're talking about the idea. He brings it as a machloket. Did Moshe shatter them? Or did Moshe trap them? And that opinion that he drop them, by the way, turn over for a moment, and you'll see it in number 6, the Malvin. Malvin number 6, Vayicharach Moshe, underlined over there, Vayicharach Moshe, Vayashlech miyodavet haluchot, v'chazal amru. This is it, this is what explains everything. Sheparchu ha'osyos ve'ein shekarabo ha'egel. As Moshe Rabbeinu starts coming closer to the Egel, you know what happens? The letters start flying out of the Luchos. So you know what happens? Do you think anybody was ever capable of carrying the Luchos? It was impossible. You know what the Luchos were? The Luchos were like the Urim. The Urim, the Gemara says, was nosei et nosav. The Aron carried those who carried it.
Carried itself.
Nobody, the Kohanim didn't have to carry, it was on their shoulders, but it was the Aron that was carrying them. What was the motor of the Aron? What gave the Aron that ability to move? And not only that, when they crossed the Yarden, Yahushua, the Kohanim, the Aron flew across the Yarden. What propelled it? The Luchos. But now as Moshe Rabbeinu is coming close to the camp where they're dancing around the Egel, he sees the Osios Parchos Ba'avir, the Osios are flying out. And you know what he's left with? He's not left with Luchos that have Kedusha. He's left with stone, heavy, inanimate, non-sacred stone. And you know what? Nobody could carry the Luchos. They fell. There was no way to hold it. Because the Neshama that moves the Luchos and gives them their meaning and gives them their significance has now departed. See the words. V'alkein nasum kibedim, they became very heavy. V'hutzrach lahazik otam b'shtei yodav, he now had to hold on to the Luchos with two hands. Ki holach behem ha'neshama, because the neshama of the Luchos was gone. Ha'neshama ha'noseit otam, the neshama that carries the Luchos. V'alkein shibrom, ach ha'shechol v'ha'kedusha, therefore he broke them. No, but if we had a kasha to begin with, who gave him the right to take these luchos that were sent by God to the Jewish people and break them, according to those who say break them? He didn't break luchos. He broke shteina. They were no longer luchos. The neshama had flown out of it. And according to the Rashbam, because the neshama had fled from the luchos, they were nothing more than stone. And very, very heavy stone, and he was incapable of holding it. And you can see in the words of the Malbim also that he is placing the focus on that Pasuk 19 where he says, Vayashlech mi yadam. It's two hands. It's not one hand anymore, it's two hands. Yes?
But the Pasuk still says, Vayashlech mi yadam et haluchot, through the luchot. So
wait a minute. You can ask me a better question. What about the question from the Pasuk that that Nechama Leibowitz brought, where at post b'shnei haluchot, I grabbed onto the tuluchot, v'ashlichem me'al shtei adai, v'ashaber le'nechem. That's where I'm going to come in. I'm going to explain that right away. But I have to tell you what Rav Soloveitchik said. Rav Soloveitchik's question was, which is easier, carrying something very heavy down the mountain or up the mountain? Of course, up is far more difficult. And here Moshe Rabbeinu is carrying it with one hand up the mountain, couldn't hold it with two hands down the mountain. So here the Chof says one of his classic, beautiful, beautiful ideas. And it's a beautiful idea that really expresses for you what's called the Brisker Shita. The Shita Brisk was to analyze things and break it down into its component parts. And one of the means of looking at things through the eyes of Rav Chaim Mibrisk and then Rav Meshe afterwards and Rav Yosef Zilber Levi afterwards is the idea that in anything that happens, there's always a gavra and a chefza. Those are the two classic Briskian terms. A chefza means an object. An object is something that one acts upon. I take an object, I break an object, I carry an object. A gavra represents a man who has intent and motive and ability and creates and forms. A human being can be one of two things. He can be a chefza. A chefza means he's unable to act against his environment. He feels like he is tossed and turned from pillar to post. He feels like he is a victim of a fate that surrounds him. And then a human being, by the way, can be the same human being at different moments in life. There are moments in life at which he takes hold of himself and he moves, he creates, he does, he has volition, he expresses his feelings and his opinion. Then at other times, he's the object acted upon. Says the Rav, when Moshe Rabbeinu was up at the mountain and God gives him the two luchos, and he tells him, Lech, they go down, because your people has acted corruptly, they have made a golden calf. Moshe Rabbeinu, all of a sudden, in a single instant, he sees the whole world that he has attempted to build and create and make and form to forge God's people crumbling before his very eyes. He goes down that mountain like a man who's been acted upon by history and by fate. He's lost. He's in a state of surrender to a terrible fate. He failed. 40 days ago he had them at Har Sinai, and now 40 days later they're dancing around an ego. A man who is a chefza, an object that fate acts upon, doesn't have the energy, the will to hold the luchos. But 40 days later, when God tells him, carve for me two sets of luchos, and I am going to write on that set of luchos that you're going to carve, I'm going to write what was on the first. When Moshe Rabbeinu gets up early in the morning to climb the mountain, this is a man with purpose, with dedication, with a goal, with an objective. He is beginning the great undertaking again of building a divine people, God's people. He doesn't simply walk up the mountain. He can run up the mountain. He doesn't have to hold the luchos in two hands. The fact is he doesn't have to hold the luchos in one hand. On his pinky finger, he can carry the luchos. When man has purpose and goal and objective, he can accomplish the greatest things in the world. So the Rav says that's the difference between Moshe coming down the mountain the first time and Moshe going up the mountain the second time. Coming down the mountain, he can't even hold it in two hands. They drop. They slip out of his hands. Going up the mountain, one hand. But wait, I'm not finished. What am I going to do with that pasuk over there? In number 5, the pasuk that Nechamala brought, where post for Shnei Haluchot, Vash Michene Ostei Yadai, Vash Abrem Le Nechem, what are you going to do with that? I'm going to take them each separately. And I'll tell you here, I had Siyata Dishmaya. The simplest one is Vohet Post. What does Vohet Post mean? Every place in Tanakh. What does Vohet Post mean? The moment we break the spell of this posit with the word Vohet Post. Before I go to a posit, the Gemara, everybody knows the Gemara. Tofasto meruba
lo
tofasto. I was at a Kenes Rabbanim now. My wife and I, we went about 250, 300 Rabbanim. If we do it every half a year, we solve the problems of Klal Yisrael. And in another half a year from now, we'll meet again because there will be new problems that will arise and we'll deal with them. But this was fascinating. It was all beautiful stuff, and you're going to hear about it in the weeks to come. It was dedicated to Yerushalayim. There were some very beautiful things were said. We'll take care of it. Tofasto merubo lo ta'oso. Why am I telling you about that? Because where they had the vegetables, you know, tomatoes, big bowls of tomatoes, and cut up melafon, how do you say it? Cucumber. So they had tongs. In normal places, there's a spoon, a big spoon. There were tongs. And I tried seeing how many shtiglach cucumber I can hold with the tongs. I'd start off with about 7 or 8, and I'd end up with 2 little shtiglach. The tomatoes, I couldn't get more than 1. Because tofasto meruba, lo tofasto, you can't hold it. When Yosef runs out of the room from Eshet Potiphar, Fatit Viseyu, she grabbed onto him the big dough in his garment. You know what that means? You know who knows the meaning of for etfos? Any little kid in this country who plays tofeset, hide and seek, catch me. You know what litfos means? Something that's slipping out of my fingers and I'm trying desperately to hold on to it. Ashes Potiphar wants to hold on to a Yosef who's running out for a Paseo. I grabbed him with big dough. I did Paseo with big dough. The moment you see Moshe Rabbeinu saying for a post with Shnei Haluchot, you know what the pasuk is telling you? I was having extreme difficulty. If it means that he's holding on to it, for achazik b'shnei haluchot. For it both means they are slipping out of my hands and I'm holding on for dear life to the luchos. That's how the Rashbam learns this pasuk. And then for ashlichei mi'al shtei yodai. Remember the first time I said this, you wrote up 20 years ago, maybe more. And I didn't know what to do with the word Vashlichem. And I prayed. So it was early that morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm learning the Gemara Masechta Megillah, who was before. You know, Kitisa usually comes before Purim. And then I learned the Gemara. The Gemara that says that Miriam was a Neviah. She told her parents that they're going to give birth to a great child. And when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, Moshe called up by Torah. The Gemara says the whole house became full of light. So her father, remember, she is the one who talked her father into taking her mother back. He kissed her on the head and he said to her, "Biti nevuatech, your prophecy has been fulfilled." Listen to the next words in the Gemara. Kivan shehish lichuhu la'yor, I can't even translate it yet. When they made a basket, and what did they do? They took Moshe Rabbeinu and they threw him into the oars. How are you going to read it, Gemara? Gemara says, Kivon shenishlichu l'yor. They did not cast him into the oar. They placed him very gently into the oar. The word v'ashlichehu does not necessarily have to mean that which is cast down. It may mean, for example, shalachet. The leaves begin to drop off the trees. In autumn, the trees that drop are called shalachet. You know what shalachet means, or what va'ashlicheyu means? Something for which I either have no use, or it has lost all of its value. They're afraid that Moshe Rabbeinu's little life is over. If they're caught, he's dead. But Ashlech does not have to mean there, our zets, not a zets. It means that there's something that has lost its value, something that is slipping away from me. So we've taken care of the word v'etpos, which is the clear proof, and I'm ready to say that the Rashbam saw that word too, and that gave him an indication of what the pshat over here is. Etpos is only something that's slipping from your hand. It's never used in any other place. Well, there's a few psukim in Tanakh, in Malachim, where it says the king said to them, Tifsum Chayim, grab them alive, bring them back to me alive, go find them and bring them back. Vashabrein le'enechem. I'll tell you how I learned Vashabrein le'enechem. Did they fall out of my hands? In your presence? Moshe Rabbeinu is the leader of the Jewish people. He takes responsibility. What should he have said over here? I didn't mean to. I'm sorry. It's a mistake. You couldn't have held it in your hand if it weren't in you. A leader doesn't hide behind any kind of subterfuge. You know what he does? He says that as it is. I couldn't. I failed in my task. Yeah? I broke that. That's right. Because they dropped from my hands when they were entrusted to me by God to bring to you. And I dropped it, I broke it. But there's no necessity to learn this pasuk as though Moshe Rabbeinu premeditatedly went ahead and destroyed it. But remember, I'm only giving you one side of the story. I can send you off to some shiurim someplace and they'll tell you just as vehemently that, what are you talking about? Les Grasses and Colors, the Gemara, Gashi Kershis and Barato, Art Scroll, Moses smashes the loopholes. Elu ve'elu divelu kim chayim. There's a tremendous amount of truth in both approaches. I just want to defend the Rashbam. That's what I want to do. And I say, huh?
The Rashbam.
Didn't I say the Rashbam?
Yes.
I'm getting all excited, so you know. I could have said the Rambam. Wait a minute. Now, here we are in. Here we have Parshas Ekev, number 7. Number 4. Let's take a look at number 4. This is in Parshat Ekev. It's Moshe Rabbeinu retelling the story. And I turned and I went down from the mountain. And the mountain is burning in fire. Ushnei luchot habrit al shtei yodai. He's describing the first time around. Here already he says it clearly. What in Parshas Kitisa is a yud dalid, you understand? Yud vav, which is pronounced Yodav, which is pronounced Yodav, here it's more pronounced. He says it clearly. Coming down the mountain, he was holding it in two of his hands. And then we have over there underlining the pasuk that we just explained, where post b'shnei haluchot v'ashinchei me'al shtei yodai. Shtei yodai! That's the most important part of the... Not every part of this pasuk is important. Where post v'ashlich v'ashavei shtei yodai. Same Moshe who had it originally in one hand, now it's clear. In Parashat Ekev, he says it clearly, it was two hands. Now let's go down to number 7. At that time God said to me, this is 40 days later, come up to me to the mountain. You should make an ark of wood. God says, I will write on these luchot that you bring up to me, that you yourself went ahead and carved them. And I carved two luchot, like the first. And I went up to the mountain. You understand? The beauty over here is everything is precise. Everything is precise. It says the right thing exactly where the right thing should be said. One hand, two hands. But what's most fascinating is in our parasha when it says that I came to the camp, that he came to the camp, and you have this one word that incorporates both the singular and the plural. The yad becomes yadav, because this is what's happening to him as he comes closer to the camp. He may have been able to hold it in one hand till then, but no more, no more, because the sanctity is gone. These are rocks. They're nothing more than rocks. Moshe Rabbeinu has not taken to himself a right that was not his. He was sent by God to give luchot to Klal Yisrael. These are not luchot. These have nothing in common with luchot. There's no sanctity, there's nothing. But when he goes up the second time to receive the luchot, as the Rav says, he's a man with a mission. He is a man with a goal and an objective in life. The man is now charged to rebuild the Jewish people again. That Moshe Rabbeinu is a gavra. That's a man with all of the strength and all of the power. He is moved by the highest goals and objectives of all. He can dance up the mountain holding the luchot in his pinky finger. But when he's an object worked upon by faith, he comes barreling down the mountain and can no longer hold on to the luchot. Now you will understand why everything is so precise. It becomes precise, that precise, that when we daven Shabbos in the morning, Shabbos Shachris, Yismach Moshe, the Manas Chelko, Ki Eved Nemon Korosolo. You called him the faithful servant. Klu Tefedet Berosha Matatolo, a crown of glory you placed on his head. Bom Dolof Anechal Hasina, when he stood before you on Sinai, Ushnei Luchot Avanim Horid Biyado. Two luchot of stone he brought down. One hand. The Chatuv Behem Shmirat Shabbat. The Chen Chatuv Betorah Techa. In the luchot it says Shmirat Shabbos. And if you take a look in number seven. It only said that I went up to the mountain and the two luchot are in my one hand. Definitely we say that he comes down with both luchot, one hand. So that's my defense of the Rashbam. And it was a little sharp when the Chabad Leibowitz wrote, Anachnu, we cannot accept the words of the Rashbam. And I'm saying, oh boy, can we be Mekabel? Because the Rashbam is rooted in the text. Ikur Pshito, Boet Pos. Yes. David?
Can we say at the end of Yismach Moshe,
yeah,
Pasuk Bohem Shiras Shabbos, that that's the riot, that it's the second book that he brought down in his hand because it's Shomar is Yom Shabbos, rather than Zohar is Yom Shabbos.
Shomar is in the second one?
We say it. Shomar is in Aiken.
Shomar is in Aiken. Very nice statement made.
Because when he came down the first one,
yeah,
he was holding it with two hands.
That's right.
When he came up with the second one,
yeah,
holding it with one hand because it's still execution.
I hear what you say. He says, the Chatuv, Bahem Shmirat Shomar, he's bringing down the second Luchos, and in the second Luchos it says, Shomor et Yom HaShomar Lekachor. It better be right. You sure? And the first one... Wait a minute. No. In Lechadodi we say Shomar v'Zachar, and you know what the question they asked on Lechadodi? That's not the order. The order of Torah is yes, Zachar v'Shomar. So why did he write Shomar v'Zachar? Because his name was Shlomer. It wasn't Zlomer. So he had to. So you're right. Okay. Skip the wrong, you know. The second one says Shmiras Shabbos. The Chen Chosul Behem Shmiras Shabbos. The Chen Katul the Torah Tema. So I'll leave you at least with a question. What do we say after this in davening? In Shmon Esrei. What comes right after this? The Shomru Menei Shmiras Shabbos. That's not in the Luchos. Why don't they quote from the Luchos? On that note. Think about it. We say in Davening, the Chatur Behem, it says, the Chain Chatur Behem, and so it says in your Torah. What would we expect right now? To quote from the Luchos, Shomer is Yom HaShavos of Kacho. But that's not what we say. We say V'shomru v'nei Yisrael HaShavos. Completely different. V'shomru v'nei Yisrael HaShavos. Is that in Parshat Kitiso? That's in this week, sir. We right, that's just a question. It has nothing to do with the whole shir. The shir was in defense of the Hashbar.
What about the Klotz Kasha?
The Klotz Kasha. I forgot about it and he forgot about it because there is no Kasha anymore. Yeah? Right? Well, I'm sorry. I'm going to go to the hospital.